Welcome to the BBB National Programs Podcast Better Series, where we will explore top-of-mind topics with business and industry leaders to understand the leading trends and innovations that continue to push the envelope in today's marketplace.
Thank you for joining us today on the Better Series podcast and our special series, Retail Therapy. I'm James Lee. In our first two episodes, we've been digging into the state of the retail sector of the U.S. economy, how it grew to be the largest private employment segment, and how changes in consumer tastes, lifestyles, and technology are reshaping the retail sector. We're calling this episode Boldly Going, with a nod to Star Trek and the Starship Enterprise's five-year mission to boldly go where, in this case, no retailer has gone before. Haley LeSavage writes about the business trends and events in the retail sector for one of the most popular newsletters around today, The Morning Brew. She's taking a break from her specialty newsletter, The Retail Brew, to visit with us today. Haley, thanks for joining us.
James, thank you for having me. I'm so excited to speak with you and to your listeners.
Well, thank you. You know, your new publication, Retail Brew, you've been around for a month now and growing rapidly, but you focus a lot on what's emerging in retail that gives us a clue about, you know, what may be the norm a little down the road. So when you look at that, when you see all of the information coming into your view, what do you think is a trend and what do you think is just a fad?
Well, for starters, I think in the retail sector, there's a lot of talk about the so-called retail apocalypse and things being rather bleak. But from my point of view, I think it's an incredibly exciting time to be in the retail industry. And I'm seeing a lot of trends that are indicative of innovation and reinvention across retailers of all breeds. So for starters, one thing I'm particularly noticing is an increased investment and support of sustainability from Inditex, the largest fast fashion retailer, deciding that it's going to make all of its products from sustainable materials by 2025, to newer D2C brands starting their businesses from the bottom up with upcycled materials, like Rothy's making shoes from recycled plastics or Everlane sustainable denim. Brands are very concerned about the environmental impacts of their products and know that customers also value a clean supply chain and a lower environmental footprint. So, you know, to see from all aspects of the industry, brands kind of changing their supply chain processes if they weren't sustainable, or new businesses starting out sustainably, I think is something that isn't going to go away anytime soon. And another trend I'm also keeping a close eye on is the rise of not only influencer marketing, but influencer-led brands. So I think in a lot of media, influencers on social media get some flack for being kind of a fake business or just using Instagram to peddle products. But a couple of people in that space have been really successful in taking the audiences they've built, advertising for other products, and then launching their own independent retailers or apparel collections. So, for example, there is an influencer named Julia Engel who, after cultivating 1 million followers on her own blog, then went and started her own retail brand for apparel that has been massively successful. And the same thing is kind of iterating with other influencers, where they know their readers and their followers so well that they can then turn them into customers and make products specifically for them. So I would say those are two things I'm keeping a close eye on and that I don't think will be going away anytime soon.
Yeah, and those seem to be driven a lot by you know, sort of changes in demographics and lifestyle, are they not? You know, Inditex, that's is that the Zara brand is probably what most people would know. So those are relatively new kinds of business approaches, because most businesses, you know, operate out of being, you know, enlightened self-interest. So obviously they're seeing something that tells them their customers will not purchase from them if they don't do those things. Is that a fair assessment?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think to go a step further, something else that I think a couple years ago might have been considered a fad, but is becoming more of a lasting change in the industry, is just how much power the consumer has over top level decisions at the retailers where they shop. You know, because especially social media has made the retail industry a little more democratic. Everyone can kind of get in the comments section and swarm brands with their thoughts, positive or negative, on what a retailer is up to. And that sort of feedback, when it reaches a critical mass, can't be ignored. So in the case of, you know, Inditex, for example, for years there have been rumors about them and other brands that they're filling landfills with textile waste and that their carbon emissions footprint is not so hot. And, you know, I think their new sustainability goals show that they are attuned to what consumers and what journalists and what the wider industry might perceive about their business and are actively combating that reputation with their new sustainability goals. And it also kind of takes the point from another perspective, just on the social relationship between the consumer and with larger retailers, especially with issues like representation of race and body diversity and size in popular retailers. You know, I've seen a couple people online have some success with calling out brands when their women's assortment only goes up to a 16, but the average US woman is a size 14 or above. So, you know, pointing out to retailers that they need to increase their size assortment and on a platform where other consumers can see that sometimes has led a change for customers to kind of put their dollars behind brands that are more inclusive in that regard.
So let's put a pin in that for just a second, because I want to think about this from the perspective of some of the traditional retailers. And I, you know, I think of, as a lot of people do when you think of traditional retailers, you remember the heyday of Sears, you know, because at one point they were the world's largest retailer. You could literally buy a house from a catalog.
Mm-hmm.
That's where the Craftsman style house came from.
Right.
Yeah. Now they're on life support. So can these iconic brands sort of come back from the brink if they adopt these kinds of approaches that we're seeing with the brands that are very socially sensitive or consumer centric? Is that what's going to save them, or are we going to see some of those more traditional brands go away because they can't adapt?
Well, I think there aren't really one size fits all solutions for traditional retailers that are struggling right now. And, you know, I wouldn't want to definitively say whether a certain retailer can or can't come back from the brink. I would hope that they can turn it around just for the sake of their own business. But in terms of strategies that I think are most effective right now in at least helping to pull them out of an unfortunate situation, I think what we've seen recently with regards to experiential retail could be what will really help them, especially as it boosts the relationship between brick and mortar stores or flagships and the e-commerce sales that are really booming right now. So traditional department stores, all they really had is just kind of a wide assortment of everything from apparel to housewares to literal houses, like you mentioned. But now that those products are kind of everywhere online, there needs to be a distinctive reason to get consumers in stores. And I think an example of a more traditional retailer that has done that really well is Macy's. In recent months, it's collaborated with a company called Story to make these in-store activations that change, I think, every month. The first one was color scenes. Now they have one that's outdoor scenes. And the idea is that they set up these little boutique shops within their larger department stores that, you know, are very socially friendly, have a very tightly edited curation of products for the consumer to experience. And knowing that that experience is only in the department store, only for a limited time, has increased foot traffic to the stores where it's happening. So I think if these traditional retailers can first think about ways that they can optimize the real estate that they already have to drive customers into stores and remind them of a brand experience that goes beyond a product that they can buy anywhere else, I think, you know, that's one method to keep them competitive in today's environment. And a second thing that I also think is incredibly important for traditional retailers to consider if they want to stage a comeback is considering their convenience opportunities or how they can make their products more convenient to the customer. You know, there was a recent study that came out talking about the halo effect of the relationship between online sales and brick and mortar sales. So most customers want to be able to go in store and see a product before they buy it, or they want an opportunity to interact with it before they make a commitment, even if they are going to go home and order it on Amazon or whatnot. So I think traditional retailers have an opportunity to survive by investing in their customer service component, whether it's offering last mile delivery from their store to home once a customer comes in, see something they like, and you know, have it meet them at home later, or if they're looking at their online offering, changing their shipping methods to better match an Amazon or a Walmart. I think, you know, consumers today want things quickly and they want them conveniently. And sometimes driving all the way to the mall isn't necessarily the best way to do that. So thinking about those other logistics changes would be necessary, I think.
Yeah. So, you know, thinking about these sort of either hybrid or emerging or transforming business models, I always think of places like Indochino or Warby Parker, mm-hmm. you know, mm-hmm. where they have, you know, they basically have a showroom, mm-hmm. but most of their real business, they want you to transact online. Or you think of some of the disruptive brands like the online mattresses. Whoever thought you'd buy a mattress online,
right?
You know, or Allbirds. You know, so some of these, yeah. Is that the future of what we're going to see? And if this is the transition, where are we ultimately going to wind up?
Well, to answer your first question, I think the models of stores like Allbirds, Casper, Outdoor Voices are fairly indicative of where retail is headed. And in terms of a transition, I think they are kind of the first harbingers of a retail environment where brands aren't just selling you a product, they're selling you a 360-degree lifestyle experience. And to explain that, you know, I think that we're so used to thinking about e-commerce and brick and mortar stores as in competition with one another, or like a separation of church and state. But these newer brands are showing us that you can fuse the showroom experience with a driver for online sales. But taking it one step further, these brands, and I'm thinking of Outdoor Voices and Glossier in particular, are looking to meet the consumer at other points in their kind of lifestyle journey, even if they're not buying a product at those points, meaning that they are opening flagship stores, they are starting new content hubs online that are editorial sites to supplement the activities that go with the product they're selling. And even if they aren't driving sales at those particular moments, they're reestablishing brand affinity in such a way that the consumer thinks of them as something that's not just the place where they buy a pair of shorts or the place where they buy a lipstick. It's the place that represents who they are as a person, for lack of a better phrase. So I think the future of retail is really, or the companies that are going to survive in the future of the retail are the ones that have a really strong sense of who their customer is and what the product is that they're selling, and then optimizing their in-store and online experiences in such a way that customers aren't just going to them to shop, but to also find advice and insights for other aspects of their life that interact with the products they're buying.
When you get to that point where you're integrated in your life, that is a true brand. I mean, that is the classic mm-hmm. definition. So our last question for today, because I think we could talk about this forever. But last question for today. So if somebody wakes up tomorrow mm-hmm. after having listened to this or after reading the Retail Brew, and they look in the mirror and they go, you know what? I'm going to open my own retail store. Mm-hmm. What would you tell them they need to do to be successful?
Well, first, I think it all starts with customer research. There are so many avenues to talk to who you imagine your ideal customer to be. You can really find data that supports whatever retail store it is that you're wanting to start. So I would say first, get out there and talk to customers about the idea you have for your business, whether it is that you're launching a wellness product or a new apparel category, whatever it is. You need to make sure that there's someone out there who wants to buy it, and that there's someone who has a need for what you're going to sell. I mean, I think a lot of what has made some newer brands successful is that their products actually fill a gap in a market, whether it's for size or for the technology behind a product. It's not just another frivolous thing that's going on the market. People actually need it. And, you know, trying to be all things to all people right off the bat isn't what's going to make them successful. And the second thing I would say for someone who really wants to get into retail, as they're developing their new store or product, it's kind of come up in my previous answers, but I think just building a strong brand experience and brand identity is so essential. I mean, I think, again, with places that have really thrived in recent years, they have not so much customers as fandoms or cult followings that really believe in their products and the whole lifestyle that's associated with it. So I think having an understanding of, you know, not just what you're selling, but your kind of core values that you're hoping to communicate with your product, whether it's that you want to be a 100% ethical and sustainable brand, or you want to be the lifestyle solve for one specific need, building out the strong branding presence alongside that, that really communicates that point to the customer, I think is really essential right now.
Haley LeSavage is the guru of all things retail for the Morning Brew's Retail Brew Edition. If someone wants to sign up for the Morning Brew and Retail Brew, Haley, how do they do that?
They can head to morningbrew.com/retail, and there you can type in your email address to sign up for our twice weekly retail newsletter. You can also interact with us on the days that we're not sending on Instagram at Retail Brew.
Haley, thanks for joining us today on the Retail Therapy edition of the Better Series podcast from the BBB National Programs. And thank you for listening. We're planning a special live stream episode with our retail experts. Go to bbbprograms.org, then click on that podcast tab to subscribe and receive information on how to join the live stream. And as always, you can listen to more Better Series episodes on iTunes or your favorite streaming platform.
You just enjoyed the Better Series podcast. Be sure to tune in next time for a brand new episode. To learn more about our other shows, visit betterbusiness.blueberry.com. That's betterbusiness.blueberry.com. Follow us on Twitter at @BBB_NTL Programs. Send your comments and ideas to podcasts@bbbnp.org. The thoughts and opinions expressed on this podcast are the views and opinions of the guest, not those of the BBB National Programs or its affiliates. This podcast is for information and educational purposes only and is copyrighted with all rights reserved. This podcast is protected by Blueberry's Terms of Service.